Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
It was in the late 1940s and early 50s, when classical music still had a mass audience in America, that a beautiful young child appeared who could play the violin. Michael Rabin had been born in 1936. He could really play, spectacularly. There he was, this little kid, 11, 13, 15 years old, who could play rings around many adults. It wasn't just the technique, which was formidable. It was this luscious tone he got from the instrument, even at that tender age. Somewhat later, author Anthony Feinstein was learning to play the violin as a child, too.
I remember looking through my father's list of long-playing records, and there were all the big names, you know, the Heifetz and the Elman, etc. But the one that really stuck out for me was the LP cover with this kid on it, and so there was this early bond.
Feinstein grew up to be a doctor, professor of psychiatry at the University of Toronto. His new book, Michael Rabin, America's Virtuoso Violinist, is the first full biography of his boyhood idol. Once he started asking around, details kept coming out from family and friends about the dramatic life and painfully early death of one of music's most fascinating former stars. Rabin had started playing the violin at age 7. He sped through his lessons, first with his father, a violinist in the New York Philharmonic, and then with the renowned violin teacher Ivan Galamian, who taught many of the greats. The boy's career blossomed beyond expectation. Carnegie Hall at 13, world tours, that sort of thing.
By the time he was 15 or 16, there wasn't a thing that he could not do on the instrument, which was, you know, quite remarkable. But that came at a cost. He led such a sheltered life. His mother in particular kept him so cloistered and focused on music.
There was another Rabin child, Bertine, a sister.
The two children had very different lives. She had a much more natural development, whereas her brother was basically in his room for 8 or more hours a day practicing.
He was further isolated by home tutoring.
And it was Jean Rabin, his mother, who controlled that. It was not Michael's father. It was very much this forceful mother.
What was driving Jean Rabin, a piano teacher, Michael's perfectionistic, controlling mother? For an answer, Feinstein looked back to the years before Michael was born.
He had a brother, Jay, who, by all accounts, was a very talented pianist, a precociously gifted child who died very young.
Jay had died of scarlet fever at age 7. It was the pre-penicillin era. He died within days.
And so when another child was delivered to them with this extraordinary talent, she really seized it in a very major way and tried to control every aspect of his life. Not just his music, but his socializing, girlfriends, everything.
Rabin's correspondent and confidant, it turns out, was his sister Bertine, who was still alive.
And so wherever he traveled, this lonely young boy poured out all his feelings and his thoughts to her in his letters.
I can't take it much longer, he wrote to Bertine. He was 17 and on tour with his mother, playing his usual 70 concerts a year. You'd think I'm an infant the way she treats me and makes the fool of me in front of people. It's embarrassing and belittling. Meanwhile, he was climbing to unbelievable heights of success. He went to Hollywood that year to play for the soundtrack of a film called Rhapsody, a turgid melodrama about musicians, starring Vittorio Gassman and Elizabeth Taylor.
I'm in love with a musician.
Oh.
He's a violinist.
He wrote this letter to his sister saying that the movie stinks or something like that, and he didn't think very highly of Elizabeth Taylor either. But I think he certainly enjoyed going off to Hollywood and being part of that.
But the older Michael Rabin got, the more the anxieties of his paradoxical life intruded.
As he got towards his late teens, early 20s, he started to develop this phobia that he would fall off the stage. And he responded to that by moving further back from the edge of the platform. And, you know, then reviewers started to notice, why is this man, when he's playing a concerto, standing in the midst of the orchestra? And in response to that, he started to consult some family doctors who in those days would be using the barbiturates and those type drugs fairly freely. Those were the sedatives of that era. And it was from there that his coordination started to become a little impaired while he was playing.
Which was the beginning of a sharp decline in his career. He was becoming seriously addicted to various medications.
And he started to get multiple prescriptions from different doctors at the same time, which is clearly a very dangerous thing.
At the ripe old age of 26, Michael Rabin played a disastrous concert at Lincoln Center. The critics were merciless. After that, Rabin's career had ups and downs, including a horrific near breakdown on stage at the Shrine Auditorium in Los Angeles, in full view of 3,500 people. Later, after some time away dealing with his phobia and his drug dependency, there was a triumphant return concert, with critics once again admiring his work. He started seeing a new girlfriend. He had apparently beaten the drug dependency. And then, his strange death at age 35 in his apartment in New York. Newspapers had printed conflicting accounts. Rumors spread about suicide, drug abuse.
Why does a man in his mid-30s die an accidental death? And sadly, you come back to the barbiturates.
Michael had begun treating his anxieties with drugs again toward the end of his life.
Yeah. Taken some barbiturates, probably lay down to rest. The phone may have rung. He jumped out of bed, and he was wearing socks, no shoes, and he slipped on a polished floor and hit his head.
He hit his head on a table and bled profusely.
He hemorrhaged from there, and it was a hemorrhage that killed him. So it was an accidental death. It was not suicide.
It was a tragic death at a moment when his life might have been turned around.
There's everything to suggest that he was a very nice man, a very sweet and gentle person.
You can hear it in that tone, perfectly and distinctively Rabin. That will stay with us forever. And now there's a new book about his life, reminding us that even perfection can be profoundly imperfect. For WNYC, I'm Sarah Fishkill.